Company.
Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 19th. I'm Ray Graff. It sort of feels like spring now, a little cooler today, but in general, we are now into spring, and it's a perfect time to bring back our experienced birder, Rich Guthrie, and environmental educator George Steele to talk about birds on the program. Anything from identifying them to feeding them to housing them. The number to call with your bird calls, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Rich and George and you coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds on the program once a month or so, and we always welcome Rich Guthrie to answer your questions about them. Also today, we have George Steele. Now, Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. George Steele is a wildlife and forest biologist who also spent time with New York's Department of Environmental Conservation, where he worked with birds of prey. Always good to have Rich and George here. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You may also email the program if you so desire. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Rich and George, welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, Ray. It's nice to be here.
Nice to have you both here. Rich, you were in Florida for a while, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you feel good?
Uh-huh.
Rested up?
Uh-huh.
But wait, you don't have much of a tan.
It's okay.
That is okay. Well, it's good to have you back. You missed one heck of a blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was exciting. And George, what brings you here?
Birds.
And
nature.
You're up to, you're hatching some stuff.
Oh, all kinds of programs going on. Right now I've got some incubation programs. Chick eggs, of course, so they're domestic birds, but mm-hmm. It's basically the same thing for wild birds getting ready to incubate.
Right.
Voorheesville Library has them hatching right at this very moment, so you can stop by there, and I'm going to be setting up an incubator at the Bethlehem Library next week, and I've got school programs going on.
Terrific. And what's the temperature we need to hatch an egg?
About 99 to 100 degrees. Birds' body temperatures run a little warmer than us.
Mm-hmm. And well, we're what, 98?
Yeah, we're 98, but what, most birds are 102, 103, somewhere around that. Be a little fever for us, but for them, that's the temperature they operate at, and then they have to incubate the eggs. The interesting thing about birds like chickens, because they're ground nesting birds, their eggs are on hold until they have a full clutch. So, for example, wild turkeys, they'll lay an egg. Mom will go off, do her thing, get some food, come back a day or two later, lay another egg. When she has a full clutch of eggs, whatever she decides, then she'll start to incubate. So all of the birds, all the babies start growing at the same time.
How long can an egg be in suspended animation, so to speak?
Weeks, actually.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And matter of fact, the eggs we buy in grocery stores are already probably about 3 or 4 weeks old by the time they get to the grocery store.
You're kidding.
Yeah. The nature of birds to, at least these ground nesting birds, to go into suspended animation. With robins, they would start incubating right away as soon as the egg is there. So the first bird hatches is going to have an advance over the second bird and third bird. So you'll end up with different sizes of birds in there. But they're up in a nest, so mom doesn't have to worry about one little one running around while she's waiting for some other babies to hatch.
And how long does a mommy robin have to sit on the eggs?
I'm guessing, what is it, maybe about two and a half weeks? Yeah,
yeah,
about 2 weeks.
How about chickens?
It's 3 weeks, 21 days.
They take longer because when a chick hatches, it's fully developed as a chick.
Yeah, they're ready to go.
They're not naked like baby robins and song sparrows and bluebirds are.
Interesting.
So they're all feathered up and ready to run.
My favorite is killdeer. When the killdeer hatch, they're ready to go, and there's typically four babies, and it's the wildest thing. If you find a family, four little babies running around, mom or dad will try to draw your attention away from them by doing a broken wing routine, squawking as if they're injured. So if I was a fox or a cat, I'd be following mom
or
dad
link.
Away from the babies.
And they lead you away in the opposite direction.
Right. But then you go, oh, I know where the babies are. So you turn around and walk back towards the baby. What does mom or dad do? They fly up in the air, land back in front of you, and do the whole routine again.
And if you're a fox, you're dumb enough to fall
right,
for it
twice.
Right,
if you're twice. A fox, a fox isn't going to turn around and look for the babies. The fox is going to go, where is that? Where is that? Oh, no. That bird was supposed to be my meal, and now it's gone.
Are you guys ready to take some calls?
Let's run.
Let's definitely. Do this thing. 800-348-2551 is the number. Carrie in Plainfield, Mass. Carrie, you're first.
Hi, guys. The last couple of years now, daily, I'll see one eagle, and a lot of times I'll see two of them. And the interesting thing I saw last week is there was one that was roosting on one of the trees on my property. It was there for quite a while. And then I looked up in the air, and I could see the second eagle. And he was soaring pretty high up, but he was coming down to the tree that that roosting eagle was on. And I've seen them both on the same branch together. But what he did is when he came down, he landed on the back, like piggyback of that eagle that was already roosting. He probably spent like 10, 15 seconds, maybe 5 seconds on that eagle. And then he got off. Then they both stayed on that same branch for maybe 10 minutes. Then they took off. They went to another tree, and he got back on it back again. And then he got off, and he stood next to the other eagle. And I was just wondering, is that a mating ritual?
Yep, sure is. It's spring is in the air, and this is time to get moving.
Yep. And you might have noticed
I never saw that before, and I got one more other question for you too, Rich. Is I live on a pond, and they stock it quite heavily with trout, and there's everybody's up here fishing for trout. And I know that people, I've seen them, they'll get an extra trout, and they throw it out for the eagle, and they'll swoop down, and they take them, and they'll bring them up in a tree, and there's lunchtime. But my fear is a lot of times some of these trout, the bigger ones, will break the line. Of course, they got a hook on them now. And I was wondering if that hook's going to be a problem for the eagle.
It could very well be. And more importantly, for some of these anglers might be using lead-weighted lines or weights. And that's even a bigger problem. The lead poisoning with higher predators, eagles and other predators and scavengers, is really detrimental. So non-lead fishing gear is always recommended. In
it's
fact,
actually required now.
Now it's required in so many places, as well as gunshot. So a very important consideration and good observation, too, by the way.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. George Steele, Rich Guthrie here, and Ray Graff with you. Nicole in Nassau. Nicole, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. I'm just getting ready to put out my hummingbird feeder. And I've been feeding my birds all winter, and I know they tell you to take down your regular bird feeder April 1st, and my neighbors tell me they have seen a bear. But other than the bear predator, would it be wrong to continue feeding the regular birds over the summer?
No, I keep my feeders going during the summer. But bears are not an issue in my neighborhood, at least not yet. Mm. And that could change overnight, so to speak. So, yeah, the recommendation is don't leave the feeders out overnight if you're going to put them up and you are in a bear-prone area. And also, you know, keep an eye out. You really don't want bears to like you too much.
No.
If they love your yard, we got a problem. Yeah. So.
And you will want to make sure to have your keep your feeders clean, because with the warmer weather, you've got more chance for fungus growing on wet seed and wet shells of sunflowers and stuff like that. And fungi is not a good thing for birds. There's a variety of things that are bad for birds in that way.
Bottom line, yeah, keep feeding them.
All right, Nicole, thanks a lot. Now, birds would have a good sense not to eat something that had fungus, right?
Not
birds
always.
Will be able to fix. No,
it's just, I mean, the spores are in the air. So if they're feeding around, they're maybe picking good seed, but the spores in the air and they're breathing it in. I mean, it's not necessarily even eating it. As far as I know, I think most of it is airborne fungi spores that then are a problem.
And the other thing, there are occasions where there have been instances where issues have infected groups of birds coming to bird feeders, and most notably are some of the waterfowl that end up with contagious diseases from high concentrations in small ponds. Yeah. And the other one is, of course, the conjunctivitis that affects the house finches.
Yeah. All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Wayne in Brunswick. Wayne, you're on. Not Brain. Wayne.
Hey,
Wayne.
Gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just purchased a house, and before purchasing it, I noticed some of the soffits were kind of hanging down. So after I purchased it, I took a ladder, went up, and tucked the soffits back. One of the soffits had a bunch of hay in it, and I just figured it was either squirrels or birds. Tucked the soffit back up, and then I noticed some starlings at the peak of the roof where the soffit is. And it's exactly where the electricity comes in. I don't want to put a ladder up there. How can I get rid of these guys without, you know, killing myself?
Okay, well, that's a good consideration.
Yeah, right. Priorities. It's not easy. I'll say that. The starlings are very persistent. They do like to nest in little cavities on buildings, houses, office buildings, sheds, and the like. You will have to simply enclose that whatever opening they're using, however you can do it. Going up there might have to be the trick. Here's something you may try without, I don't know what the layout of there is perhaps a rubber snake laid out by the entrance to that thing might discourage it. Yeah, really. They have an innate fear of something like that.
Well, it's at the peak of the roof.
So it's really not accessible for that. No, shucks.
No,
that would have been fun.
Now, let me ask you one more question, if I could. Will they do any damage, like a squirrel would, or are they just laying eggs and getting on with their business?
Yeah, that's all. A squirrel could be very detrimental.
Right, they're not going to be chewing on things like a squirrel would chew on things.
Okay. Probably, maybe wetting down the nesting material might be a cause for a short. But yeah.
Okay.
I would be concerned.
All right, I will keep an eye on it. Gentlemen, thanks much. Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Dan, thank you. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll take a break. It is Vox Pop, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst-Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. Interim Healthcare, celebrating 46 years of in-home care, supports the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy and its quarter century of conservation in the Capital Region. InterimHealthcare.com. Albany Parking Authority, offering more than 5,000 public parking spots in Albany, parkalbany.com for on-street and garage options. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. georgepropane.com. And Union College Concert Series, presenting pianist Jeremy Denk to close its 2016-17 season. He performs a program traversing the history of western music from Michaux to Ligeti and back. Sunday, April 30th, 3 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by George Steele and Rich Guthrie. It's our bird show for the month of April. And Rich Guthrie, I know there are many, many, many activities. So let's get the Cliff's Notes version of the same.
Yeah, we have so many field trips that are scheduled for this early spring, right in through May and into June. But the ones coming up in April are perhaps the best ones to go try out.
Okay.
Especially if you're new at the game. And the reason for that is you got very few leaves on the trees, so you can see through the forest a lot better. And also, the number of different kinds of birds is kind of limited still. They really haven't come flooding in from the south. So it's a good time to learn the basics, learn the commoner species, the early arrivals, and then be ready for the real surge in May.
Okay.
So coming up in April, on the 29th, over in Chatham, Old Chatham, New York, we have the Powell Sanctuary, and there is The Alan DeVoe Bird Club is having a field trip. And for each of these, I would recommend, look them up on your website, because there are specific information about pre-registration. Not all of them require that. But the meeting time and a contact information is all on there.
Okay.
So the 29th, that would the Powell Sanctuary in Old Chatham, New York. The 30th, here in the Albany area at Waterford, New York, there is a field trip to Peebles Island State Park, and that's with the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club.
Okay.
Then on the Great Barrington area, the Housatonic Flats with the Hoffman Bird Club on the 21st of April. All that's right. Coming up. And on the 26th, the same group, the Hoffman Bird Club, over to Stockbridge for the Jackson Pond field trip.
Oh, sure.
Again, check their website for their information. And just a couple of more. Saratoga Springs, New York, on the 22nd. The Southern Adirondack Audubon Society is running a field trip to the Bog Meadows Trail in Saratoga Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 26th, the Waterman Bird Club in Dutchess County, New York, will be going to Buttercup West.
Buttercup.
Can that be bad? And then on the 30th, they'll be going to the Pauling Nature Preserve. And a little further south, down in Orange County, New York, the Mearns Bird Club, M-E-A-R-N-S, birdclub.org, will be going to the Bashakill. Okay. The Bashakill is a fabulous, a really remarkable kettle of great birds in the Orange County, New York, right by the New Jersey border. Great place to go. Good time to be there.
Okay.
And I've got a program at the Landis Arboretum coming up on this Saturday. It's a Spring Hawk Watch. We're overlooking the Schoharie Valley, which is a north-south corridor, sort of a traffic way for birds in migration. We'll be looking for raptors in migration. We'll get some bald eagles. The broadwing hawks are the ones I'm hoping to see some. Maybe some sharpshins and osprey. If you
think terrific.
So it's at 10 o'clock at the Arboretum. I'll do a hawk identification workshop at 1 o'clock, but anyone can stop by at any point in time and leave whenever they want.
All right, now say hi to Fred Breglia when you're
right.
He runs the show.
Yeah.
All right, this came in via email. We'll do a couple of emails and then back to the phones we'll go. This one's from Amy. I see lots of hawks, but I don't think I've ever seen a hawk's nest. What do they look like and where do they tend to nest?
Well, it depends on the species. Generally, the typical hawk nest is a stack of sticks on top of a tall tree.
Very tall tree, right?
Yeah, well, it doesn't necessarily have to be very tall. Sometimes it's at the very, very top. Many times it's sort of tucked in the middle. And as soon as the leaves come out, they're invisible. So now's the time. If you're going to see a hawk nest, is the time to look. The kestrel, which is a falcon, will nest in a hole in a tree or a nest box if you happen to put one up.
Mm-hmm.
Peregrine falcon will nest in the Albany area. They nest on the bridge over the Hudson River and many of the bridges in the and have become something of an urban hawk. Amsterdam and Troy. And also out there in, I think they're nesting in Pittsfield as well. So there are, and in Maryland, another falcon is nesting in our city parks.
And that's a bird that, 30 years ago, wasn't even in the state.
Yeah, a brand new neighbor.
Yep.
All right, this one came in from Miranda in Worthington. Two questions. I saw a green and yellow parakeet outside Smith College the other day, chirping in the sun on a phone line. Would this be a lone escapee or possibly part of a larger band somewhere?
It's probably, it could be either. And I'm not quite sure where, Springfield, Mass?
Smith College.
It's Smith. Well, there is the monk parakeet, also known as, the monk parakeet is also known as, it'll come to me any minute.
All right.
Yeah. But they have an escaped established wild population in New York and New England.
Huh.
It could be one of that mob. Or lots of parrots and parakeets get out.
Get away, yeah. Someone's window was open, flew out the window.
Thought they would come back, and they never did.
This is Miranda's second question. A pine warbler has decided to eat from my suet feeder for the first time after 7 years. Why now? Is the weather changing? Are my local pine trees not as fortifying?
Well, good question. And birds feed by example. They look at what other birds are feasting on and say, might be worth a try. Usually it's a no-go. But pine warblers and some of the other small insectivorous birds have seen the chickadees and nuthatches and the woodpeckers feasting on a suet feeder and try it out. And they say, not bad, good protein, I'll be back.
They need the fats in it, yeah.
And so, and pine warbler seems to be one of those that are more prone to do that, rare enough as it is.
Robert in the town of Wright writes, are a juvenile turkey vultures playful? We seem to have a pair and juvenile playing tag and attack type games. Is this unusual?
Well, they're probably not young birds. These are probably adults, part of their courtship dance.
Yeah, mating.
Okay. This one is from Janine. Hi, I have several types of birds in my backyard in Albany. Can you recommend a book or app that will help me identify them?
Oh, lots come to mind.
There we go.
And I would suggest visiting your neighborhood backyard bird store, such as Wild Birds Unlimited up there in Saratoga Springs. We'll have a whole variety, and you can sort through them. Some of the best guides are those that focus on the eastern part of the United States, so you're not dealing with stuff highly unlikely in our area.
Is there any yet, like the Star, the observatory apps where you can hold it up to the sky and it'll
tell you what the bird is?
Yeah.
There are some very good apps out there online. You could get Merlin, M-E-R-L-I-N, which is put out by Cornell University. Excellent app for identifying birds. You just go down through the list and it tells you, even if it's likely or not likely in your area. So you see a brown bird with a red head, and you look out there and bingo. You'll zoom in on it. Just like you say, there's astronomy apps. The bird apps are in there, too.
But you won't be able to hold the camera of your iPhone, let's say, up and have it identify that.
Facial recognition technology.
There's one, I think, on trees where you take a picture of the leaf and it helps you identify the tree.
Very interesting. This one came in from Carl. On the 14th, the trumpeter swan landed in the Bashakill in southern Sullivan County. It was still there yesterday. It's the first confirmed sighting of a trumpeter swan ever in Sullivan County, according to Carl. Mm-hmm. This might help birders in Orange, Ulster, and Sullivan counties to add a rare bird to the list. The swan can best be observed from the boat launching area across from the Bashakill Winery.
Well, the trumpeter swan is a huge, big white bird.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really, really big. And they're new to the area, more or less. There's historic records going back to the colonial, pre-colonial days, but ever since they've been over-harvested out of the area. But the Canadians have been reintroducing trumpeter swans up into Ontario, Canada, and we have a little spillover effect.
Oh, how about that?
So I think that we can expect the numbers of trumpeter swans, because they're very successful at doing what they're doing, filling that vacuum that was left. And I think we can expect more reports of trumpeter swans in the New York, New England area in the near future.
Do they sound like a trumpet?
They do.
They really do?
Yeah, a bugler sound.
Could you make the sound?
We'll have to wait for them to fly over.
Rich, you know what? You've been away for 5 weeks.
I know.
You're slipping.
Next time I'll bring the trumpet in.
All right. Well, please don't. Dan in Scotia. Dan, you're on.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's a curiosity question. I have an exterior door on my home that has a kick plate at the bottom, brass. The last week or 10 days, two sparrows land on the porch facing the kick plate and jump at it, running their head into the kick plate. And they'll do it all day long. Yeah.
They see the reflection.
Is it it's a shiny metal plate.
On the glass, right?
Yeah. However, the other day I found a little blue egg sitting right in front of the door also.
Oh, that was not intentional. What you probably have are house finches. They look like little brown sparrows, and they're she will build her nest somewhere in or near the house, your house, hence the name. If you have a flower pot on the porch or maybe a wreath left over from Christmas, there's a new home for them. So I think
that could be where the egg came from, but they're definitely seeing the reflection, and they're behaving like they're saying, okay, this is my territory. What are you doing here?
Yeah.
And the weird thing is the bird in the reflection is saying the same thing back to them because it's their reflection.
Right. Now, if it's not normal or right to take that egg and try to put it back in the nest, that's not a good thing to do?
Okay.
Yeah, you can do it.
Can do it?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, and will the birds accept it? There's this myth about that.
Old wives' tale.
It's not true.
Most birds have a very poor sense of smell anyway, so they can't really even tell that your scent left behind isn't going to really bother them. And
if Dan found it,
will they continue doing this?
No, that was an anomaly. Okay. Yeah. How that egg got there?
No, he's talking about going into the brass plate.
That's possible. And what you could do is cover the reflection, put a little brass polish on it just to cut down on the reflection. And then after the nesting, they'll be no longer interested in that reflection. And you can wipe it off. You'll have a nice, shiny new kick plate.
So if he found the nest and he had the egg, is he in danger of mommy or daddy bird attacking if he goes to put the egg in the nest?
Not likely.
Yeah. I mean, individual birds behave as individuals. I remember working on a project on Great Gull Island where the terns would all squawk their nests on the ground. As you investigated, they'd all fly up in the air. But you'd have individual birds that would come down and strike you, and you always knew it was them because everyone would say, oh, watch out for nest number 422, because that's the one where you get whacked in the head by a bird.
That's so interesting. Maria in Olive Bridge, I'm assuming. Maria, you're on.
Yes, hi. I'm calling about my bluebird box. From what I read and heard, it's important to clean out a nesting box in the wintertime, of course, when the birds are not there.
Whoa, do we lose her?
I heard a click.
I heard a click, too. Yeah. Sorry, are you still there?
Hello?
Are you still there, Maria?
No, this is Penny.
Oh, for Pete's sake, we lost
her. Well, let me get back to Maria's question.
Okay, hang
if
on,
I can.
Hang in there, Penny.
Hang in there, Penny.
You're
yeah.
not even on the list, so
right,
this will be
we'll,
a surprise.
We'll get to
just hang on. We'll answer Maria's question first.
Maria, I hope you're listening out there. Yes, clean out the nest boxes, now it's not too late. And the chances are the birds will appreciate that.
And then once they've finished nesting, go ahead and clean it out again if you know the birds are out of the nest, because they might have a second clutch or some other bluebirds might come in and use that nest again.
Maria, are you still there?
I think I am.
What?
Am I?
I got to tell you, I'm starting to lose it here. All right, so Maria's back. Penny's
gone. Welcome back. Hi, Penny.
Okay, so
hi,
did
Maria.
You hear that answer?
Yes, I heard it. One thing I wanted to add about that is we had a bluebird box up for about 3 years, and each year the male would come and sit on top of the box and sing his little heart out, and occasionally a female would come by, and she'd kind of look and say, well, not so much, and fly away, and we never had a nest. And last year we had our first nest, so we were really happy. Hmm. And then in the wintertime we cleaned it out about a week, not winter, but about a week before they showed up again. And I assumed that they were, you know, coming back to use the box again. But they just poked their heads into it and then flew off. And they've been back maybe once or twice since then. And I'm kind of hoping they'll come back and nest. I was afraid the fact that I cleaned it out discouraged them.
No, not likely. They're just window shopping.
Okay. You might want to put up a few other boxes then, too. Maybe, you know, another spot even nearby. They might choose to pick that.
Oh, okay. And would another pair maybe inhabit the next box, or are they territorial?
They are territorial, and it depends on the distance between them and the food supply that's available. So I would not count on there being two pairs nesting, but one is plenty.
Okay. Well, thank you
for that.
Maria. We appreciate it. And 800-348-2551, the number. I'm sure Penny from Del Mar will be back and say, well, what happened? And we'll get to her as soon as we can. Steve in Ashfield. Steve, you're on. Or not. Oh, there he is. Yes.
Okay, you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yep, we're good.
Oh, okay. I'm not in Ashfield. That's why I was.
Oh, well, where are you calling from? Things are, we're off the rails now, Steve.
Go Harry.
Okay, so Harry. Fair enough.
Okay, so a lot of questions and comments. When you put out bluebird boxes, aren't you supposed to put out two so that the tree swallows get into one first and then defend that area so the bluebirds can easily move in without being harassed? Does that make sense?
That's a strategy, yeah. That's where you see these paired boxes.
I saw them at the Arboretum.
Right. The tree swallows are very aggressive to make sure no other tree swallow moves into the box right. next door, and they don't care about the bluebirds.
Yep. And then I have two.
There's that click again.
Oh, that's strange. Okay, now he's gone. He's gone for good on my screen. So, well, he did get one in, and this is it's all very interesting. But I think we have Penny back now, so there's a silver lining in everything. Penny and Del Mar, you're on.
Thank you. I was talking to my friend on Long Island last night, and she has a woodpecker who keeps pecking at the metal cap on her chimney, and so it echoes, you know, through the house, and she doesn't know what she can do to deter that woodpecker. It's really loud.
Well, woodpeckers do that, and the reason they do that is that's they don't have a song, and so they're the percussionists out there. So they're out there just drumming away and using that as their love song and territorial song. So the thing to do would be to somehow mute the metal flashing if you can, because that's what they're looking for, is the sound of banging their head against that metal.
Yeah.
And
it works for all of us.
Depends on what you're looking for,
absolutely.
Though.
Absolutely.
Depends on which band you're in.
That's right.
So really, I mean, it's but in any day now, the woodpeckers will give that up and move on to the serious business of nesting. So when they find their mate, they'll be happy, and your neighbor, your friend, will be happy down there. But
when they find their mate, the banging will stop.
Well, okay, let's hope.
All right, insert your
okay,
own
thank
joke
you
there.
Very much.
All right, thanks a lot for that, Penny. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Owls, we're out doing yard work over the weekend in broad daylight. We hear an owl very close. Mm-hmm. We can't see the nest anywhere.
No, you will probably will not see the nest. This is a hoot owl.
Yeah,
the barred owl.
Yeah, about
who
that
for you. Who cooks for you all? Yeah.
Do they frequent evergreens?
They will frequent. No, they're actually a hardwood forest owl.
It sounded like it was coming from some of our tall evergreens.
They'll find an evergreen for hiding during the day to keep out of
sight.
For
the west daylight, yeah.
Yeah. And the barred owl will nest in a hollow in a tree.
A hole in a tree, yeah.
So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, not far away. But
it was very close.
For you. Hey, lucky.
Yeah, it was exciting. We stopped raking for about 3 hours looking for it. Bonnie in Ashfield. Bonnie, you're on.
I just had a comment about the fella that had the starlings that were nesting near to his point of attachment where the electric wire comes in.
Yeah.
I work for a utility company, and many utility companies will disconnect the service at no cost and then come back and reconnect it.
Hey, so good to know. That's a great public service.
Yeah, if he wanted to seal it off really, really well, he could call his utility company and see if they'll just disconnect it for him to do that. And then you won't have to be concerned. But he still should use a wooden ladder.
Yeah. Yeah. Bonnie, just in case. But, Bonnie, that's really good information, and I'm sure glad that the utility companies have that in mind.
Yeah, well, that's great. Hey, Bonnie, thank you for that.
Okay, thank you.
Bye now. Bye. Our number is 800-348-2551. Okay, let's do one more before we take a break here. The phones seem to be working again, and let's tempt fate with line six. And Byrne in New Salem, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I made a friend with a rough grouse late summer last year, and it's been going on all winter. He would just seem to want to hang around and want the company and would follow me around. And then when the weather became cold, I thought, well, maybe he'd like some seed. And I started feeding him, and that went on all winter, and it is ongoing still.
Well, good for you.
It's a bit unusual because usually you can't get 100 feet from one of these guys.
You know, rough grouse are funny that way. And they do, on occasion, will hook up with people or machines.
Tractors or bicycles.
Lawn mowers and the like. It's a funny thing. I had one follow me down the highway as I was driving along. A thing would fly to keep up with the car. And I would slow down and stop, and he would slow down and stop. And we played this game for about a quarter or half a mile, and then I had to go. You know, get lost, pal. But anyway, good for you, Baron. That's
This rough grouse, when I leave with the truck, he follows. He flies. I drive fast and he can't keep up, he flies after the truck. Sometimes he lands on the bed.
Oh my gosh.
That's great.
And I see him most every day.
Cool.
It's interesting because the thing with grouse is that they're not a bird that biologists have not been able to farm them like pheasants. The department still does release pheasants, but the pheasants are game farm pheasants. And I remember when they used to be released in our area, as soon as a tractor started, all these pheasants would be coming out of the fields waiting for food because they're used to being fed on the game farm. But that's interesting about the grouse. It's an unusual bird for doing that. Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break here, and we're joined by George Steele and Rich Guthrie. It's the Bird Show on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive kiosks, and commercial casework for special events, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern. The1850house.com. 845-658-7800. Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic, natural products, no cage drying. Facebook and 866-WASH-WAG. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, Eye Care, Dry Eye Therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, hosting an open house for students pre-K through grade 12 on Saturday, April 29th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. All campuses open for tours. WaldorfSaratoga.org for details.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with Rich Guthrie at George Steele and you at 800-348-2551. Now, we'll just do a couple of quick emails. We have so many calls. We'll try to race through as many as we can. This one is from Richard. Is there an independent app or function in eBird that can group birds by calls? I'm thinking of birds that sound a lot alike. For instance, a pine warbler and chipping sparrow and a few others with a similar call. Right now, allaboutbirds.org will show similar-looking birds, but I would like similar-sounding birds.
There is something out there that goes back a while, back to the cassette tape days.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
and that's called Birding by Ear, a wonderful, wonderful learning tool. I don't know if it's out in digital.
You can get it as a CD.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
Birding
as a CD,
by Ear. It was by the Peterson Field Guide people. Wonderful app.
There's two volumes of it, I do believe.
And it does exactly what the person was asking
but
for.
But that requires your own brain to be the processor. In other words, there is no voice recognition for birds yet.
They're getting
these are all great app ideas.
They're getting towards that. I know that there's bird recognition where you have a sonogram on a video screen, and they're using that to try to identify
eBird
birds.
Is moving in that direction. They're encouraging participants to send in audio recordings that they've taken in the field, and the Macaulay Library at Cornell University is putting them together, and that, I think, is a work in progress that they're going to develop and improve.
Outstanding.
Yeah, that Ross's Gull that was up in Tupper Lake. I think Cornell was there to record that.
Yeah. Yeah. They're taking what they can get.
Yeah. All right. This is from D in Cornwall and Hudson. A couple of things that have worked for me. I hang a rag from each bird feeder and spritz it with ammonia every morning. Haven't had a bear visit ever since.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Sounds delightful. Also, regarding goldfinch conjunctivitis, I stopped using the tube feeders because their portholes spread the infection to the finches' faces.
Yes, that's correct.
She says, now I use the nylon mesh thistle socks, which I can wash every few days. The finches need only use their beaks to extract the seeds and don't touch their faces to the mesh.
Good ideas.
Okay, so that works for you?
Yes, it does.
All right, back to the phones we go, and let's see, with any luck at all, this will be Marcia in Kinderhook. Oh, Marcia.
Yes, hi.
So, you're on.
I wanted to thank you for telling about the Alan DeVoe bird trip, but I think it's going to be at Olana on April 29th.
Hang on, he's checking his files.
I am looking at the notes I've taken off the website.
If you go to the website, we have all kinds of field trips there, alandevoebirdclub.com.
Okay.
Definitely go to the website in case there's
miscommunication. That's a good plan. Always confirm.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Check it out.
Okay. Well, Marcia, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it.
Oh, you know what that was? That's a Hudson Mohawk Bird Club field trip to the Powell. They're raiding the Alan DeVoe Bird Club's backyard territory. That's what's going on.
There's a little battle going, a turf battle?
Well, I don't know. It's a little excursionary force.
I wonder what happens when these bird clubs get upset.
They bump into each other.
Steve and Schoharie. Steve, you're on.
Hi, guys. I was talking to you earlier and got cut off.
Oh, yeah. That was you.
That was me. So, yeah, I have two active bald eagle nests, and I was watching one on Monday, and nine turkey vultures were circling overhead, and I'm guessing it was the female on the nest. She stood right up in that nest, and she just was telling those guys, stay away from my house.
Wow. Yep.
That was pretty cool. I've also seen three birds fly in the windows. One was a male cardinal that flew into my dusty picture window and left a perfect image of itself with its head all crooked to the side the window. And I moved here from Ithaca, so I know the Cornell Bird Lab real well. and that area. So that's a, if any of the listeners have never been to that building, it's well worth the trip. It's a beautiful area anyway.
Well, thank you, Steve. Thanks a lot. We got to move it along, my friend. But thank you. You got a couple of cracks there. And let's go to Jeremy in Chatham. Jeremy, you're on.
Hi. Hello.
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 Hi.
So I have two Wren questions. We have had for about 5 or 6 years Wrens come to our nest, little house on the property. Are they the same same Wrens?
Probably.
Probably, yeah.
If not, they're the offspring.
The other thing is I've heard that Wrens are kind of territorial and that maybe we wouldn't get any other birds and houses we have around because of the Wrens.
They definitely want to fill in anything that could be a potential Wren house. They're not against the other birds. It's just they don't want another Wren using that hollow or that nest box next door. So they'll actually bury alive young birds or eggs.
What?
In the nest. Yeah,
well,
yep.
Not intentionally, but
no,
it's
they're just
the process
just,
of building
they're filling
a nest.
It, filling it up to say, I don't want another Wren moving in.
Oh, I see.
I've kind of seen that where they've kind of like started building a couple of houses, one over here, one over there, and then they finally settle on the other one.
Yeah, that's the Wren's way.
One last question about the swans. Where I play golf, there were some swans there, migrated from a pond up the road. Now they're gone. Any chance they'll come back?
Yeah, good chance. And I'm wondering what kind of swans they are. We have three kinds of swans in the area.
Yeah.
And the common one that most people relate to is the mute swan, M-U-T-E,
right.
Swan, which is not native to the area, but they are frequently found around. They make themselves comfortable almost any available nest site. The tundra swan migrates out of the area, and the trumpeter swan is a newcomer and hasn't really established a pattern yet.
All right, let's head over to Judy in Woodstock. Hello, Judy.
Hi. I got dropped before.
Oh, boy. Well, you're on now.
Okay, what I want to know is I've tried to feed hummingbirds, and it's an area that gets sun for a little bit of the day, and then it goes into shade. They come once or twice, and they never come back, so I assume that the food is spoiling. Will they come if I hang in the shade?
Well, they really, I don't know that particular about where the feeder is. They're accustomed to finding natural flowers in shady environments or out in a sunlit environment. So I would suspect that it's probably the food, the sugar solution that you have.
Too sugary, not sugary enough?
Maybe one sugar to four parts water.
And this was commercial solution.
Okay, well then.
So how long can you leave it out there?
I would recommend is going to just a homemade solution, pure sugar, no color, one sugar to four parts water, stir it up, mix it up. I just put my hummingbird feeder out this morning. They're on their way, and I just put mine out. Again, it should work.
Is that one to four by volume?
Yes, by ingredient. You know, 1/4 cup of sugar and 1 cup of water.
And no food coloring.
And no food color.
Straight up. Judy, thanks a lot for that one. 800-348-2551. Don in Red Hook. Hello, Don.
Hi. How are you?
Tolerably well. How about yourself?
Okay. My question is very, very short. I'm cleaning up my yard, and I threw out my wreath, and I found a bird's nest.
Yeah.
Is that common?
Probably,
house finches, yeah,
probably house finches or Carolina wren. Either of those will build on nest on a porch setting. So, if it's a fresh, if it's a fresh nest, they'll have to find a new place to put it.
They'll restart.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for that. 800-348-2551. We go over to I hit the wrong button. Valerie, you have not been waiting long enough, but you're on now. Valerie and Troy, go ahead.
Your lucky day.
Okay. Thank you. I have a big old maple tree that needs to come down, and I was hoping to get it down before nesting season, but the service that I have engaged can't do it for another 3 weeks, and I'm wondering, am I going to be wiping out a lot of bird nests and baby birds and maybe baby squirrels?
Probably.
It's possible. Yeah. Have you seen activity around the tree?
I have not.
Well, yeah, the thing is that right now there's probably few, if any, birds nesting in that tree.
Right.
But in a few weeks, they'll be back. And when they return, they start building. They settle down in a big hurry.
Well, can you do anything? The tree's coming down anyway. Is there anything you can do to discourage the bird? Spray mayonnaise or something?
Vinegar.
Vinegar.
Yeah. Well, that's for the bears.
This is like a 50-foot tree.
I know.
Yeah, it's a lot of mayonnaise.
Yeah. They're going to come in and start building. The thing, the thing about that is, if the nest is destroyed early enough, they will no harm done. They'll find another place to build a nest.
Okay.
The problem is if they have already laid eggs and incubated and the young have hatched, and that will not happen until the end of May, early June.
Well, okay. You might be in within the window. They might be able to. Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds like time. You got a shot there. Now we go over to Tanya in Westfield. Tanya, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask, I love mockingbirds and I love catbirds. And while I haven't had any mockingbirds visit the yard, I have had in the last 4 or 5 years have catbirds visit the yard. I love them. I love the way they look, the way they sound. But my problem is, out of the last 5 years or so, twice I have found dead catbirds in my backyard. And I want to make sure that I create an atmosphere where they're welcome and they're healthy, and I don't know whether they live in birdhouses or trees. What can I do to make sure they come to my yard and stay safe while they're in my yard?
They're going to be nesting in the thick, brushy edge. I'm wondering, Rich, are they affected a lot by West Nile?
No.
No, they're not. Certain birds are affected more by West Nile. It's sort of interesting that you found dead ones there.
Might they have
hit
a window?
In a row, and they weren't torn apart. You know, they weren't harmed. They looked
predator,
completely whole.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought, I love these birds so much, and to find 2 years in a row to find a dead one in the backyard wasn't.
They are a ground, almost a ground-dwelling bird, eye-level bird, and I'm just wondering if they might have hit a window, and instead of, you know, they're not going to be fast-flying into the window. Maybe they were stunned and then wandered off and then succumbed after effect.
Okay.
Well, that could be, I suppose. That could be. What do they eat? What can I feed them? Can I put something out for them?
Well, they're a bug eater, and bugs and grubs.
Okay.
And what I've done in the past, I've fed them mealworms.
Mealworms, larvae, I wonder. Yeah,
they love me for that. They'll come right up for it.
And where can you get mealworms?
A pet store.
Pet stores, yeah.
Okay. Margaret in Albany. Margaret, you're on.
Oh, yes. for a few years, I've heard this bird call, and I could never find what it was. And a few weeks ago, my daughter and I were sitting in the yard. It was about 5 o'clock in the evening, and I heard the bird call. And this was first week in April. And I looked and looked because I could see the direction it was coming from, and there were no leaves on the trees. I see a red bird at the very top of the tree. It was not a cardinal. And the call is so different. I have no idea. I've been listening so long. I looked it up, and the bird, to me, looked like a scarlet tanager. And then I looked it up, and it said that they do come in April, and they leave in the fall to go south.
Well, April, the first
early,
week
yeah.
of April, I can almost guarantee it was not a scarlet tanager. First week of April, they're still basking in the sun south of Florida. I can't. Can you do a little imitation of the sound?
Oh, I love this.
No, I can't. But at the end, I'll tell you, it has this funny sound, and I can't even mimic that. But this is what it does. It goes, at the end of its call, and it is so unusual.
Well,
and I've been looking. I'm pretty sure it was a scarlet tanager. It was it was red, and cardinals are more of an orangey red to me. And this was a blue red, and I looked it up, and it definitely looked like the scarlet tanager.
Well,
it
says, I'm going to Gunther Tootie bird.
My money goes with cardinal.
Cardinal. Would they make that sound?
Yes. Cardinals are very variable in the songs that they make.
And that single note kind of call.
Yeah, they end their note. They have a type of ending to their song. So, and variations to that theme.
Well, it's not like a whistle though. It's more of it's a deep throat sound is the only way I can explain.
Maybe it has a cold.
Well, the other possibility is.
No. I've been listening for years, and I've seen the Cardinals in my yard, but this. They said the Scarlet Tanager you'll find them at the very top of deciduous trees.
Yeah, that's very true, but not in the first week of April.
What if it's an early comer?
No,
it's pretty happening.
I read about it, and it did say that they come to this area in April.
Yeah, April 29th.
What do they sound like?
April 31st.
They have a very more melodic song.
They do this song, and then at the end they have the three low throaty sound.
Yeah, not even Scarlet Tanagers will have. They have a very Robin like song, and it's very different than anything that's out. Here's my theory: you were looking at a cardinal, and you were listening to a mourning dove.
Oh, that's an interesting theory.
No.
The cooing sound.
Definitely not. And my daughter and I, we both saw it, but I didn't have my binoculars to see.
We'll have to get a recording.
I'm sorry to say that this mystery will have to go unsolved
As an eBird reviewer, I'll have to say I will encourage you to check again, listen, and take a recording.
And photograph. Yeah.
What can we do?
Yeah. Well, this was a reasonable amount of fun. Rich Guthrie and George Steele, thank you for being here. Support comes from Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, beers, wines, and spirits. Outdoor seating available. Live music by Ray Mason, April 21st. ChesterCommonTable.com. The Lathrop Communities, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts. Serving older adults in the Quaker tradition, together transforming the experience of aging. Lathrop.Kendall.org. Penny Farthing Investment Management, Amherst. A socially conscious, fee-only investment advisor of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies, brightpenny.org, and Dance Flurry, presenting Albany Shindig Maple Sugaring Party this Friday, 7 p.m. at First Congregational Church, Albany. Music of Quebec and dancing with live accordion music, danceflurry.org. Thanks again to Rich and George for being here. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy for handling the controls today. Your phones were answered by Carol Lapani, and our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Now, tomorrow, we're going to head on down to the science farm, don't you know? That's at 2 o'clock. Stand by now for news.